From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The Democratic National Convention begins Monday, delayed by weeks because of the COVID-19 pandemic, and switched from an in-person gala in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to a nearly all-virtual event. A politically tumultuous year has led up to a convention for a party that has been roiled with internal conflicts over ideology. While the Democrats' old guard clings to a neoliberal capitalist hawkish platform, for whom diversity is a pretty buzzword, a new generation of energized Americans, led by staunchly progressive people of color, has attempted to break through. Perhaps nothing symbolizes this internal rift better than the DNC's speakers list, which features the hugely popular Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez with only a one-minute pre-recorded speech, compared to South Bend, Indiana mayor and failed presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg scoring a prime live speaking spot. My guest is Ellie Mistal, the nation's justice correspondent covering the courts, the criminal justice system, and politics, and the force behind the magazine's monthly column, Objection. He's also an Alfred Nobler Fellow at the Type Media Center. And his latest article in The Nation is called The Democratic Convention is Shaping Up to Be a Centrist Hoedown. Welcome to the program, Ellie.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you write that this is basically a centrist hoedown. We see, not surprisingly, former President Barack Obama and, of course, former First Lady Michelle Obama on the speaker's list. But we do also see Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Do you think that the DNC was at least attempting nominally to go for some sort of ideological balance?
No, not at all. I feel like, look, the way that we have to analyze who the DNC decided to allow to speak, we really have to take off the top the spots for people that almost had to speak, right? It's not unusual in any major party convention to have major people who ran for president and lost the nomination to have them have, you know, prominent speaking roles at the convention, right? Like, it's not a shock that Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or even a Pete Buttigieg would speak, because they were almost the Democratic nominee, right? It wasn't surprising when Barack Obama had Hillary speak at the convention in 2008. That's what happens, right? It's actually more notable when you look at who ran for president the DNC did not invite to speak. You know, initially they snubbed Andrew Yang, although he, you know, complained, and Yang Gang kind of did the thing. They still haven't given a spot to Julian Castro. They haven't actually given a spot to Beto O'Rourke. They haven't given a spot to anybody from Texas, which is just all right.
Right, but given that Texas is, you know, potentially in play now.
Right. So yes, I'm happy that Sanders and Warren we'll get to speak, but it's not surprising to me. The problem that I have is with the 17 or so slots that were truly discretionary, right? Once you get beyond the presidential candidates and the Speaker of the House and the former First Lady and the First Lady nominee, all of who were destined to speak, like, let's look at what they did with the rest of those slots, right? And that's where as you point out already, they gave AOC 60 seconds. But they're giving, you know, primetime speaking slots to people like John Kasich, right?
John Kasich is a Republican.
Right? I've heard this so much since he was announced that, like, oh, well, we got to win. Ohio's in play and we should try to win moderate voters in Ohio. Yeah, you know who does that? Sherrod Brown, who is a Democratic senator from Ohio, who won Ohio statewide race in Ohio in 2018. Perhaps we should hear more from him instead of, like, actual Republicans, right? So I'm not, the Kasich thing is baffling to me, because it's trying to play for one class of voter, the kind of moderate white male Republican voter, who has not voted for a Democratic presidential candidate since the passage of the Civil Rights Act. And it's trying to play for that group of voters, as opposed to turning out the base, which is what a guy like Sherrod Brown does to actually win in Ohio, right? So like, I'm not having a problem with this convention speaker list from the standpoint of ideology. I'm not only having a problem from the standpoint of ideology, I'm having a problem with it from the standpoint of winning. I want to win, and I do not see how John Kasich helps us win.
The theme for this year's Democratic National Convention is Uniting America. Do you think that that was their way of saying, look, we're uniting the country because you have a Bernie Sanders and a John Kasich at the same convention?
Yeah, I don't understand why it's surely that's what they want us to think, right? Like, look, we're this big tent where we have people who believe in certain things and people who would knock down those beliefs with a giant bulldozer, right? Like, big tent. Like, I'm sure that's what they want people to say. It is a weird message in this particular moment. One of the things that I pointed out in my articles on The Nation is that this particular moment, maybe instead of uniting America, maybe we should be uniting America around competency, right? But when I look at that speaker's list, where is COVID night, right? Where do we have the night of speakers just one after the other, bam, 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 holding Trump accountable and to task for his completely incompetent response to a global pandemic, right? Why don't we have our medical experts, you know, like Ron Klain, Obama's Ebola czar. Why don't we have our medical experts speaking for a night?
Do you think that there's a fear that the convention would appear, quote, too political, which is, of course, something Republicans never fear?
Right? Like, the way that Trump has handled this coronavirus response has taken the words, should have taken the words, too political out of our collective lexicons, right? I mean, I'm old enough to remember 2 weeks ago when I read the Vanity Fair article that accused Jared Kushner of poofing a national testing plan because he believed that the coronavirus would stay in blue states. That's making your pandemic response political, and it wouldn't be wrong for Democrats to distinguish themselves from that by pointing out what a nationwide pandemic response would look like. Instead, we have John Kasich from Ohio.
Now, there are several other speakers. There are notably, of course, Democratic governors, which is also not surprising because that's often what one does in a convention. Do you think that the inclusion of Andrew Cuomo, Gavin Newsom, and Gretchen Whitmer can be the lead-in to the COVID response, given that those three governors were being hailed, rightly or wrongly, as having done much better on the COVID response than Trump at the federal level?
I hope so. I mean, I certainly think that's what Cuomo will do. Cuomo has kind of made himself a face of the state responses to the virus. Whitmer, you know, it's not unusual to have a VP runner-up type speak. And Whitmer also has taken a lot of heat in Michigan for her professional and competent responses to the crisis. With Newsom, maybe we'll get a little bit of that. I also felt like Newsom's more of a Kamala Harris validator. Harris, the VP nominee, is from California. Newsom, governor of California. They're allegedly, you know, close. They're buddies.
And he gets to appoint her replacement if
her successor,
the Biden-Harris
right?
Ticket wins, yeah.
Exactly. So I imagine that might be more where he's coming from. Look, I'm not saying obviously the Democrats are going to mention coronavirus, just like obviously the Democrats will mention Black Lives Matter. I'm sure multiple speakers will even say those words, right? But the question is whether or not this convention is going to focus on the policy distinctions, the legitimate policy distinctions that the Democrats have with the Republican Party, the popular policy distinctions. Like, people always forget, Republican policies are wildly unpopular in this country. They've only been able to sell those policies if you give them a side of bigotry, sexism, and xenophobia, right? That's the only way that they can ever make people swallow kind of tax cuts for the wealthy. So are we going to make a commission about the policy distinctions between us and the Republican Party? Or are we just going to offer, you know, character pay-ons to Joe Biden? He's a good guy. He's not an incompetent bigot like the president. And it feels like instead of driving that policy wedge home, this is a commission that just wants to stay on the surface, not get into anything too controversial, and just all rally around and clap for Joe Biden because he's a nice man. And, he is legitimately, I believe, a decent, good, decent man. It's just to make those kinds of speeches as opposed to really drive the policy difference between us and the Republican Party.
Should AOC have received more than a 1 minute, space with a, pre-recorded 1 minute speech?
I mean, it's almost insulting, right? Like, it's almost like they're trying to insult her with that as opposed to trying to promote her. I mean, look, the Democratic Party establishment obviously has issues with AOC, with the squad, with the Justice Dems. That kind of youthful passion and fire is, for whatever reason, not something that our party wants to embrace. It's a long-standing problem. More even, though, than the AOC snub, the thing that gets me is that we have so many great candidates for office, especially the Senate, who were not utilized during this convention. Right?
So these are people who are facing some tough races in November. Doug Jones of Alabama appears to be the only one that I can tell who has been part of the speaker's list. He's, of course, facing a tough re-election race in Alabama. But there were a bunch of others that were just ignored and snubbed.
Exactly. And even Doug Jones, he's at least a sitting senator.
He's an incumbent.
He has an uphill climb, but he is an incumbent, right? Where are our youthful challengers? Where's Jamie Harrison? Where's Sarah Gideon? Where's MJ Hagar? Like, where's Amy McGrath? Where are all of these people that are running to try to take back the Senate for the Democrats? Because let me tell you, even if Biden wins with like 70% of the vote, nothing happens unless you take back the Senate. And I feel like that's a point that is lost too often by Democrats. It's certainly a point that is lost on would-be Republican converts like John Kasich. If John Kasich is not helping us take down Mitch McConnell, then guess what? He's not helping us, right? And so this convention could have been an opportunity to really highlight some of our candidates that are surprisingly competitive in some purple to red states to really take back the Senate for the Democratic Party. And those people were, to a man or woman, ignored.
Incredible. So you have also the issue of, you mentioned Black Lives Matter earlier, and there is certainly some diversity among the speakers list of the DNC, just because the Democratic Party, even among elected officials and other officials, is significantly more diverse than the Republican Party. But overall, do you think there was enough Black and Brown representation?
Optically, yes, right? Like, I do think that the DNC got the optics right. There are more women than men speaking.
Oh, okay.
There are lots of people of color, all different, not just Black people. They got Black people, they got Brown people, they got AIPI people, they got everybody. The Democratic Convention looks like America. And that is kudos. I applaud them. That is good. What I could have used more of is some of the moral voices talking about what people out in the streets are trying to do to overcome and protest against white supremacy and systemic racism, right? So it's great to have this kind of visually, optically diverse slate of speakers. And again, I'm not saying that with any hint of irony or sarcasm. I think that it is great to have that. But I could have used, a Reverend William Barber, somebody to make the moral case of what people out in these streets are doing. I could have used an Alicia Garza, an organizer of Black Lives Matter. I could have used...
Or Patrice Cullors, who has just come out and endorsed Kamala Harris.
Patrice Cullors would have been interesting. Cori Bush, who just won her a primary, who comes from a
Missouri,
protest and activism tradition, right? So I could have used some more people who have been closer to the streets in these moments to tell us what, to remind basically Democrats of what we're fighting for. Because again, we're not fighting for smart centrist middle of the road policies here. That's not what we're fighting for. We're not fighting for a return to normalcy here. We're fighting to try to stop an oppressive bigot and try to really start to end some issues of systemic racism. And you just don't see a lot of that in this speaker slot, which is again why which is how I come all the way back around to your actual question. Yeah, AOC needed more than 60 seconds. Like, if she's going to be the only person you have that speaks to that kind of moral energy of the party, she needed a lot more than 60 seconds.
She tweeted a response to the fact that she got a 60-second pre-recorded time slot by reading a poem by Dr. Benjamin E. Mays that was recited by Elijah, the late Representative Elijah Cummings. I only have a minute, 60 seconds in it, forced upon me. I did not choose it, but I know that I must use it. Give account if I abuse it, suffer if I lose it. Only a tiny little minute, but eternity is in it. Time and again, she surprises me with her eloquence, her brilliance, and just picking the right tone of how to respond to not just Republicans, but centrist Democrats. I mean, she really does seem to represent, in the best sense, the future of America.
Look, her response, as you point out, with so many things AOC, is pitch perfect. It's what was she supposed to say?
Right.
Go F yourself. Mm. What was she supposed to do? Right. She's going to use, you know, as my old high school drama teacher told me, there are no small parts, only small actors. Mm. She's going to use what they gave her. Right. She's going to use it to the best of her ability. And I'm sure there will be 60 seconds of fire coming out of her mouth. But that's why it's not on her to raise the stink about this. It's on us to raise that stink and make sure the DNC knows our displeasure about that. But this is another issue, I think, with this convention. As you mentioned in your opening, it's an entirely virtual convention, right? It's foisted upon us because of the pandemic. It is going to be weird. It's going to be unlike any major party convention ever. I believe that the DNC would have acted differently if they had to try to sell some of this bunk in front of a live studio audience, right?
Right.
Like,
there's a different dynamic when there are in-person people. There's a different energy.
Right? There's a different energy when you know that people are going to boo, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so they've got Mike Bloomberg apparently will now late edition speaker spot or something, right? Like, I don't think they would have done that if that was live, because he would have gotten booed off the stage, most mm-hmm. likely, right? So I think they are taking liberties with the fact that nobody can hear you boo on Zoom, and using that to promote kind of a false sense, that's the thing, a false sense of unity, a false sense of where the main of the party is right now, in this, again, hope of convincing moderate white male Republican voters to do something that a majority of them have not done since the passage of the Civil Rights.
And in fact, Ellie, that is a really important point that I'm going to turn to, which is that this election might really be the dream election for the Nancy Pelosi's, Chuck Schumer's, and Joe Biden's of the party, who have, as you point out in your article, for years wanted to keep going after that same segment of the electorate that the Republican Party goes after, which is basically straight white men, maybe upper middle class or upper middle class, the ones that are attracted to the Republican Party, but that are so tantalizing for the Democratic Party. You write in your article that the DNC wants to fight this election in the headspace of three white guys whose autumn has been ruined because Big Ten football was canceled. And of course, they have folks like George Conway and the Lincoln Project on their side, who have very openly pledged that they are going to be voting for the Democrat in this election, the anti-Trump Republicans. And so, with the Kasich addition to the speaker list, it seems as though this is exactly what the Schumers, the Pelosi's, the Bidens want to turn to, which is that Trump has pushed the whole political landscape of the country so far to the right that the Democratic Party as it exists now feels like it can call itself left.
It's important to remember that, with some exceptions, the never Trumpers have not pledged themselves to voting for the Democrat up and down the ticket.
Right.
They're just worried about Donald Trump, right? So they're not pledging to vote against Lindsey Graham.
That's a great point. Yeah.
You know, Trump sycophant. They're not pledging to vote against John Cornyn in Texas, Trump sycophant.
Or Mitch McConnell.
Or Mitch McConnell, Kentucky, right? And this is an important point because, and again, I hate to be the cynical one. I'm just the guy that remembers what Republicans are all about. They always play to win. They didn't stop playing to win just because they hate Trump now. What is the best outcome if you're a lifelong Republican who happens to dislike Donald Trump? Well, it might be to have Joe Biden win the presidency, but to keep the Republican control of the United States Senate so that Joe Biden can't actually do anything. And then in 2024, after 4 years of frustration and legislative and a lack of legislative accomplishments, you then come back home to your party and get in line behind Nikki Haley or whoever it is they're going to run against Biden in 2024. Right. And so I point that out not to cast aspersions on any particular never Trump Republican in your life, but just to remind people to remember what Republicans are actually all about. And that is about winning for their agenda, whatever the cost. All right. And so it is critical that Democrats remember that never Trump Republicans are not our friends. They happen to be enemies of our enemy, but they are not our friends, and they do not want the same things that we want.
That is a very, very important point, and I'm glad you're making it, because I don't think we're hearing enough of it, because there are far too many people in the Democratic Party and on the left that are excited about the Lincoln Project. I mean, honestly, anybody who is a reasonable person in this country today ought to look at the Trump presidency and be utterly appalled and aghast. So it's not really a measure of something phenomenal or progressive. So finally, there will be some shadow conventions taking place. There will be, the Bernie delegates that are going to be involved. Again, because this is an all virtual event, the impact of the internal conflict is lessened because you don't have those in-person people, you know, silently holding up signs. I remember in 2016, duct taping their mouths to symbolize that the Bernie delegations were silenced, etc. Do you hope that those progressives within the party that have tried very hard to move the party to the left from the inside are going to have some kind of a say or a presence outside of the speaker list?
I mean, I hope so. I don't. Here's the other side of that coin, though, right? Like, I think, like a lot of people, I react or perhaps overreact, but I'm worried about that whole, you know, about the Jill Stein vote, right? About that part of the progressive left that becomes so disgusted with the centristness of the Democrats, which I am, you know, clearly disgusted with as well, that it motivates them to not vote, that it motivates them to vote third party, to find some other, way of expressing, who think that expressing their displeasure against this current kind of establishment crop of Dems requires them not voting in the general election. And I'm always worried about that because with my legal background, I tend to remember that there are three branches of government. Right. So we've spent a lot of time today talking about, I've tried to spend a lot of time talking about the Senate, because that's, Congress is the second branch of government here. But the third branch of government is the Supreme Court. And there is nothing that I want. There is nothing that a progressive wants that survives Trump getting one or two more justices on the Supreme Court. There's just nothing, right? Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 87 years old. Stephen Breyer is 81 years old. If Trump gets to replace them with hardcore Republicans, anything you want on climate change, anything you want on guns, anything you want about regulation, about redistribution of wealth, anything you want goes away for a generation. So this is not something that I can feel comfortable kind of playing around here. I need to know that everybody's going to come home. Now, this is my thought right now. I'm happy about these shadow conventions because I think it's easier to come home if we remember that there is a left voice here in this party, and that there is an opportunity to move even a guy like Joe Biden to the left on some key issues, right? I think it's important for people to feel like that is possible in order to bring them home in November. So I'm kind of happy with where, with the early kind of reports about these, about, you know, not just shadow conventions, but just, I'm happy that the progressive left hasn't kind of taken its ball and gone home yet. I'd rather them show up and scream and yell and boo than take their ball and go home. Because right. taking their ball and going home is actually the danger.
Right. And unfortunately, there's too much of this sense from the liberal Democrats who do want progressives to shut up. But shutting them up could mean shutting them out when really we want them in to be able to accept some critique ahead of the election in a way that is constructive can actually help the party. That's unfortunately a point that's lost on a lot of folks. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you so much, Ellie, for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article in The Nation magazine from our website and hope to have you back on again between now and November.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Ellie Mistal. He is The Nation's justice correspondent covering the courts, the criminal justice system and politics, and also the force behind the magazine's monthly column, Objection. He's also an Alfred Nobler Fellow at the Type Media Center. We've been discussing his latest article in The Nation called The Democratic Convention is Shaping Up to be a Centrist Hoedown. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.